You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the 3-0 Take, where we talk all things Major League Baseball. Here's Kyle Corwin and Nate Reyes. It all starts right now.
Welcome back to the 3-0 Take, presented by SeatGeek. This is episode 426. I'll be your host, Kyle Corwin. And I'll be your only host, Kyle Corwin, because if you've been following the show for any amount of time, you will know that Nate is on his honeymoon officially. So it's just me. As I mentioned, I believe last episode, hope to have Ryan on at some point this week. So keep an eye out for friend of the show, Ryan Ripken, good friend of the pod. So hope to have him on, maybe talk some ball later this week. But in terms of Nate and myself, you're just getting me tonight. How we doing, baseball fans? How we doing? We are 2022, depending upon where you're at with your specific team. We're about 22 games into the season. How are we feeling? Are we overreacting? Are we ready to throw in the towel? Are we ready to call it a season? Are we ready to call it a season? Some teams you might say it's a little early. Some teams you might say it's a little early. But I think there are some teams out there who are more than disappointed in the start they've had thus far. So we're going to get into that. We're going to talk Astros right here off the top. We're going to talk White Sox. A little less surprising there, but Astros. I don't know what's happening with the Astros. We're going to talk some Aaron Judge. Talking about getting booed in his own ballpark. Are we for real, New York? Talk some Red Sox pitching. How about that? Jack Leiter's debut from the last few days. Paul Skeen still waiting in the wings. Mets officially dropped their City Connect. So we're gonna get into some stuff here. So appreciate you following along. Again, even if you hop on here and you see that it's just me and not me with Nate, I appreciate you stick along anyway, or stick along for the ride anyway. But let's talk Astros here. Let's talk Astros. What a start, and not in the good way. I think it was two episodes ago where Nate and myself were talking about how, or more so Nate, talking about how a rebound for the Astros was just inevitable. He said, you know, for those that love kicking the Astros while they're down, for those that love watching the Astros fail miserably, just sit tight. A rebound is coming because this is what they always do. They're currently 7-16. They've lost 5 of their past 6. And 9 of their last 12. They've lost 4 of their first 7 series to start the season. Even with that said, the Astros will most likely be in the ALCS. Because that's what happens. Don't get upset with me, okay? Don't shoot the messenger here. Don't shoot the messenger. The Astros... I'm convinced, and this isn't me this isn't me trying to hype them up. This is just reality. The Astros, I'm convinced, could start 0-40 and still find a way to win out, to make it to the ALCS, and more than likely find a way to sneak into the World Series, because that's just what they do. So for those that are worried about the Astros start, it's understandable. It's understandable. I mean, usually when we talk about the Astros bouncing back, it's not bouncing back from a deficit this big right out of the gate. I mean, 7-16, you're 3-7 on the road. I mean, there's nothing really, really going. I mean, aside from Altuve's having a heck of a year thus far. Yordan, you know what you're going to get from Yordan. They got some good news with JV making his return on Friday, made his season debut. So, you know, some good news there. But that, talk about that rotation, man. That rotation, really the staff as a whole, 29th in baseball in team ERA. You want to know who that's better than? The only team that's better than? The Colorado Rockies. That's kind of what we're dealing with here. That's where these Houston Astros are at. This is where the team that I just got done saying was more than likely end up in the ALCS after starting 7-16. That's where they're currently at right now. But to their credit, that goes to show you how well they're able to compartmentalize year after year, it seems. They could start as poor as they are now, and they'll still find a way to figure it out. They have, I don't want to say reinforcements, because it's not as though they're getting a leg up. The reinforcements that are coming, Luis Garcia, there's a couple of other names that I'm blanking on right now that are on the way back, but they're going to get you back hopefully to status quo. And status quo for the Astros is simply playing 500 ball or better. And so with hopefully the rotation sort of figuring it out, I'm not going to say they're going to fix all their issues, because 29th in baseball in team ERA, again, I'll say, is just horrendous. And so there's obviously a lot left to be desired there in that regard. But if they can at least get themselves back into, you know, middle of the pack, back into the conversation of having a half decent chance on the bump, you're gonna be okay, because I think we know that line, what that lineup's capable of. That lineup has some firepower. I tell you what, I mean, Yordan, I feel like I have to say it every time I bring his name up, is a man amongst boys. But it's not even, surprisingly, it's Jose Altuve that's, you could argue, having the better start to the season of really the whole team. But you're going to need guys like Alex Bregman to kind of figure it out offensively. You're going to need Hunter Brown to figure it out. I think the Astros were expecting him to be, or rather to provide a little bit more out of the gate for this team coming into 2024. I don't think they had Cy Young aspirations for him, but maybe a little bit more than what he's given you thus far. I'm hopeful for his sake. Say what you will about the Astros and all that. He obviously had this guy had no connection to the 2017 Astros. So I think if you're a rational thinking baseball fan, you can compartmentalize and look at Hunter Brown as just another player, Major League Baseball. There's no need to have any ill will towards him. But as I was saying, I hope for his sake that this start is not indicative of what he is going to evolve into. I don't think it is. I think there's plenty in the tank, plenty potential. The ceiling, I think, is much higher than what you're seeing right now. But I think they're just in a, I think the Astros are just in a funk. I mean, they certainly have the title of my thumbnail is Houston has a problem. But in all reality, I don't think they have a problem as much as they have a funk that they need to break out of, because even with the Astros losing a name or two year after year, you've seen it. They just plug and play. It's like the Rays, but on a bigger market scale, I guess you could say. The Astros just find ways to fill gaps, and they fill gaps with guys that fit in that organization, guys that latch on to the mission, the vision that they have, it seems. And they don't have guys that come in and try to buck the system. They have guys that just fall into line and produce and, again, help get them to the ALCS bare minimum annually. So, again, I don't think it's as much of a problem that the Astros have. It's just a really, really bad funk. And I'm not going to hit the panic button yet for Houston, but you've got a long way to climb to get back to 500. You've dug yourself into a 7-16 hole. So you gotta reel off some good baseball, and soon, if you want to have a chance of continuing this run of dominance. I'll say dominance because obviously they've got the rings to show for it, but it's less about the rings to me and more about the persistent threat that they prove to be year in and year out. And if this is the hole you've dug yourself into, like I said, you've got a long way to go before you can re-enter into that threat conversation. Because right now, I don't think too many teams are all that concerned if they look on the calendar and see that the Astros are coming to town. And that includes the Chicago Cubs, who you're going to play following this series loss to the Nationals of all teams. The Nationals. I mean, at the very least, you could have channeled some sort of fake motivational narrative of looking for some sort of revenge from 2019 or something, just something to get the gears turning. And you couldn't even, like, that tells me that you truly are into a funk. Although, no disrespect to the Nats, man. The Nats have been playing some high quality baseball as of late. So no disrespect to the Nationals, but at the end of the day, it's the Nationals. You're the Astros. That's a series you need to win. It's to kind of put a bow on this again. It's the pitching. You got to figure out a way to provide you more depth, or provide yourself more depth, provide you higher quality innings, because it's really on you at this point. The offense is not, they're not on a tear like they usually are, but they do have 96 runs scored. So they're manufacturing runs. That's not at the top of the league by any stretch, 96. But it's enough to be winning ball games, assuming the pitching is league average, but they're not. So that's why they're dropping these games. They got a negative 28 run differential. But like I said, I'm not worried. I'm not stressed about this club. I know people are just foaming at the mouth at the thought of a potential downfall for the Astros in 2024, but I'm telling you, it's not coming. And I'll be the first to put my hand up and correct myself and acknowledge my error if that ends up not being the case. But I'm telling you, the track record is there. It happens every year. This team figures out a way to make it happen. So I'm just, until they prove otherwise, until they show otherwise, I'm not stressed about it. We will see. But I think at the very least, I think the Astros can be glad they're not as bad as the Chicago White Sox. Talk about a terrible team. I want to know. I want to know what there is more of. Chicago White Sox wins or Chicago White Sox fans in the seats? Because I don't know if you saw that video making its rounds or any handful of videos from this most recent series. There was legitimately, I kid you not, I'm not trying to exaggerate here. Somebody can run the numbers for me. Somebody check the attendance data. I'm like 99% sure the Chicago White Sox had fewer fans at their games this weekend than the Oakland A's have been averaging. And we all know the situation with the Oakland A's and their attendance issues, but honestly, my first thought when I saw how few people were in the stands is my mind immediately went to, this is what it looks like when a team has like open practice. It's like the off season, like, you know, they're like a day off or something, and they're just getting some light work in, and hey, come into the ballpark, catch a practice or something, or like one of those like side field days in spring training where, you know, you just have people kind of standing around just, you know, because they're there and they got nothing else to do. It's honestly what this reminded me of. It was pitiful. The White Sox, fresh off a sweep to the Phillies, they've dropped to 3-18 on the season. Got a note here for you. They are the 10th team in history to drop 18 of their first 21 games and the first in two decades. This is the worst 21 game start in White Sox history. They have a negative 71 run differential. Who, a team we mentioned earlier, the Rockies, they're next closest in line for worst run differential in all of baseball. You want to know what their run differential is? White Sox is negative 71. The Rockies, who we all know are terrible, negative 47. The White Sox, negative 71. That's what we're dealing with. UConn men's basketball has won more games since opening day than the Chicago White Sox. Let that sink in. I'll say it again if you don't believe me or you can't wrap your head around it. The UConn men's basketball team has won more games since opening day than the Chicago White Sox. That's the level of historic play that we're dealing with, or lack thereof, because they're not playing very well. They're not playing really at all. I'm surprised these games don't qualify as forfeits, because you're not seeing anything from the White Sox, which is surprising. You can say what you want. I know White Sox fans are feeling some type of way about their team right now. And there's probably many just general baseball fans who have kind of checked in on the White Sox. You know, you're hearing how bad they go. How bad can it really be? Oh, wow, they're horrendous. I don't care. I don't care how bad the White Sox are supposed to be. The thing that I don't understand is that their lineup doesn't, to me at least, I may be way out of touch with how poor performers are on this, are in this lineup. To me, though, this lineup does not reflect this type of performance. It just doesn't. You look at the names, like, for example, I'll pull up their lineup from today, and you tell me that this is a lineup that is off to or is capable of pulling off this bad of a start. So their lineup today against the Phillies, They had Nicky Lopez leading off. Robbie Grossman hitting second. Eloy Jimenez hitting third. Gavin Sheets hitting fourth. Andrew Benintendi hitting fifth. Kevin Pillar hitting sixth. Lenin Sosa hitting seventh. Lenin Sosa, whatever it is. Braden Shumake hitting eighth. Martin Maldonado. I understand that, for example, like Martin Maldonado, horrendous this year. I get that. And as well as a handful of these other names. But wouldn't you agree that, like, we've heard far worse lineups before? That's a very memeable thing, like on Twitter. You know, like you think back to the worst days of your team's history, like in recent years. Like you think back, like for, you know, I can't think of an example off the top of my head, but if your team, if your favorite team was just terrible in like 2019, you go back, you find a random lineup from a random Tuesday game in June, and it's just a bunch of no names. This lineup isn't filled with a bunch of no names. That's what I don't understand. I don't understand why this lineup is not capable of winning more than three games, 22 games into the season. It doesn't make sense. It really doesn't. They're just so bad. Absolutely terrible. On average, the White Sox have been outscored by 3.38 runs per game in 2024. And on top of that, they're going to Minnesota. They got Minnesota up next. And I think I read that they have the White Sox have Minnesota for like seven of their next 10 or something? Which you may not be, you may hear that and go, well, what does that matter? Like, okay, so what? If you're a team like the Twins, who, unlike the White Sox, know that you're capable of being better than you are, because the Twins aren't doing too hot. I think they're like 7-13, I think. If you're the Twins, you're talking about foaming at the mouth. You're foaming at the mouth when you see a team like the White Sox queued up next in the schedule, knowing that you have a real chance to get back on track. So if you're the White Sox, you kind of might be running into a little bit of a buzzsaw. Not that I think the Twins are a buzzsaw team, but given the situation, given the scenarios that both teams are in right now, the White Sox, any team they go up against right now is going to kick a mother down, or at least do their best to. And then again, you've got the Twins, who are off to a little bit of a rocky start, needing a team like the White Sox to come into town to right the ship. Not only do you have them coming into town, you've got them for 7 of your next 10. So, I mean, I cannot imagine a better scenario for the Twins. So, and because of that, I can think of very few scenarios that would be worse for the White Sox. I don't have much more to say on it. There was little to no expectations for the White Sox coming into this year, but I just don't think we expected them to start this bad, you know? I mean, this is awful. 3-18. White Sox been around for a long time. Their worst 21 game start in history. And here's the worst part. It's about to get worse. It's about to get worse. Can it get worse for Aaron Judge? Let's talk Aaron Judge. I don't know what to say. Getting booed at Yankee Stadium. I don't know how that happens. Aaron Judge, the captain, all rise, the face of the franchise, the American League home run king, What are we doing, Yankee fans? What are we doing? That's supposed to be your guy. And please spare me on the whole, like, we expect better of our guys. I would understand if it was Gleyber Torres that you're going after, but come on. What do you really think this is the fix? Do you think this is the solution for Aaron Judge to get him back on track? Now, look, I hear me when I say this. I know I probably sound like a little bit of a hypocrite, because just last episode I went on a little bit of a rant talking about how I think that the standing ovations have gotten out of hand. I think they've gotten out of hand. There's an obsession, it seems now, with the second a guy falls under like 250, it's like, well, we gotta let him know we have his back. April 30th, be there at the park. We're giving him a standing O to let him know he's not alone. It's like, what are we doing? The guy's hitting like 238. This happens all the time in baseball. Why in the year 2024 is this becoming a thing? Is it just because we saw what happened with Trey Turner? Okay, I mean, I understand that. But we gotta recalibrate the threshold for what warrants a standing ovation. But I got done saying all that to then turn around this episode and say, well, what are we doing booing the guy? You think that, again, you might think I'm a little bit of a hypocrite here, but I think it makes sense. I think you can find a happy medium. I don't think everything warrants booing the guy out of the stadium, or on the opposite end of the spectrum, a standing ovation the second the guy dips below like 275 at the plate. I think we can have a little bit of a happy medium now. Just a thought. I mean, is that outlandish to say? I think that's very reasonable. So with that said, I don't understand the Aaron Judge booing. Like, you know what this guy can do for you. You've seen him do it year in and year out. He went 0-for-4 on Saturday? His bobblehead day of all day. I mean, come on. It's the guy's bobblehead day and you're going to boo him out of the stadium. I expect better from you. And that says a lot coming from me. But Yankee fans, I expected more out of you. Went 0-for-4 with 4 Ks, saw 18 pitches and swung and missed at 10. He said, when they asked him about it after the game, he said, I'd probably be doing the same thing in their situation. You know, that's an accountable guy. I know I rag on Judge as the resident Red Sox fan here on this podcast, but I mean, I think he's a big boy. I think he can handle it. That's not what I'm worried about. It's not me questioning whether this is going to mess with him mentally. It's more about the message that you're sending as a fan base. Like, you don't think he realizes how bad he's going right now? You don't think he realizes how bad things are at the plate? Do you think booing him is somehow opening his eyes to that? Because I've got some news for you, Yankee fans. These guys play baseball for a living. Aaron Judge in particular plays baseball for a living. It's literally his job to do what he does. So my guess, this is just a guess, I don't know the guy, I'm just guessing that he more than likely knows whether or not he's doing a good job. That's just me. And to boo, again, I can't stress this enough, to boo the guy on his bobblehead day, that's just downright disrespectful. Downright disrespectful. But, you know, the early theme of this episode has been looking ahead to the next series to see what that means for you. And for Aaron Judge, you've got a 4-game series at home against the Oakland A's. coming up on deck starting Monday, I believe. I think they play Monday through Thursday. So you want to talk about best case scenario. You've got the Oakland A's. You've got the Sacramento A's of Las Vegas coming to town. And if there was ever a time to find a groove, now's the time. So, Aaron Judge, I'm not going to sit here and say I got your back, because that would just be a downright lie. But just know that I seemingly am one of the few people out there that recognizes that you probably know that you're not doing too well. I mean, based on your quotes after the game, I think you very well understand. And I think you know what needs to be done in order to correct that. But I tell you what, man, baseball's a hard game. Even if you know what you need to fix, that doesn't necessarily equate to results. You see guys slump all the time. You see guys identify what needs to be fixed, whether mechanically or mentally. And baseball is a funny way of saying, we're not ready. We're not ready yet to let you get back into the swing of things. We're going to let you hit some balls hard, but they're going to be right at guys. You're going to hit them right on the screws, but it's not going to show up in the scorebook. And it's possible that may have to be the next stage of this little slump that Judge is in. He'll be fine. He'll be fine. Of the items I've talked about thus far, two out of the three, I believe, will be fine. The White Sox, lost cause. Astros, they'll be all right. Aaron Judge will be all right. I'm not worried about it. It's baseball. At the end of the day, it's baseball. On the flip side, staying in the American League East, a bright spot in the American League East, I'll add. The Red Sox pitching staff. Talk about a surprise. We heard all offseason, you probably heard from me, if you didn't look anywhere else for Red Sox news, if you're not a Red Sox fan and the only Red Sox talk you get is on this podcast, you probably heard me talking about how this team was not built to compete, was not built to contend, and it started with the question marks in the rotation and on the pitching staff as a whole. I know it's a small sample size, but I checked the numbers. The Boston Red Sox lead the league with a 2.52 ERA. And that's led by none other than Cutter Crawford, who is pitching absolutely lights out right now. He had an appearance this weekend against the Pirates. Red Sox swept that series. Due in large part to Cutter Crawford's efforts on the mound. His ERA is now sitting at 0.66. Tanner Houck is sporting a 1.35. Brian Bello, who just signed an extension, fresh off an extension, was the presumed number one in the rotation. Cutter Crawford is looking like the number one in the rotation right now. But Brian Bello, who I believe, I also believe will be fine in the theme of believing in people, will be fine. Brian Bello, you can add to that list for me. And it's not even like he's throwing bad. He's got a 3.05. Like, that's more than okay. And again, I know small sample size, but he's looked good. He's looked good. And this weekend, he looked great against the Pirates, who have been down as of late. They're not doing all that well. I think they've lost six straight. But you got Brian Bello with a 3.05. Garrett Whitlock at the time of his injury, 1.96. At the time of hitting the shelf, 1.96. Nick Pivetta, at the time of hitting the shelf, also had a 0.82. And the bullpen's been fantastic. Kenley Jansen's been, he's been a little shaky. Statistically, he, on paper, you wouldn't know it. But if you watch, he's a little rocky. And there have certainly been arms in the pen that have looked shakier than others at times. But collectively as a group, the staff looks great. So I just wanted to, not that we got to belabor it, because there's not much really to go on or to talk on beyond the staff or the Sox right now. I mean, they're playing all right, but just wanted to shed some light on a situation where you have a team, a facet of a team that was not expected to be as good as they are right now, and their rotation is pitching better than quite literally, or their staff, I should say, is pitching quite literally better than the rest of the staffs in baseball. So just wanted to shed some light on that. Jack Leiter talking about not pitching or pitching not so great. Made his debut on Friday. It was I mentioned it last episode. I was very much looking forward to it. I was gonna be dialed in for it, and I was. And much to the frustration of Nate, did not look great. If you recall, I was trying to add him in fantasy, trying to pick him up as a free agency addition to the squad. And as I was doing it, I get the notification that Nate. I was literally about to hit the button. And I get the notification that Nate had made the addition of old Jack Leiter to his squad. So missed out on Jack Leiter, but frankly, it kind of worked out, at least for this first start. Did not look great. Allowed 7 runs on 8 hits and 3 2/3. It's not great. Command wasn't there. It's a situation that I think is getting more attention. Not to say that eyeballs wouldn't be on Jack Leiter for his debut, but I think he's getting more attention and is being talked about more because it's right in the middle of all of this Jackson Holliday, Paul Skenes, and the like of these young names that are coming up or waiting to come up, and you wonder whether or not they're being rushed or if their confidence is taking a hit because of the timing or because of the expectation that's laid on them right out of the gate. It's unfortunate for him. They optioned him to AAA after the game, or the next day. But again, this is not a situation in which I think Rangers fans are going to have to worry, or baseball fans, if you're just a Jack Leiter fan, if you were hoping that maybe your team got him in the draft or whatever, and you just like him as a player, I don't think you have to worry. I think this kid's going to be all right. I mean, he was showing you in AAA that he was capable of blowing it past you. I mean, 25 Ks in 14 innings. He's shown you that he can do it against some of the world's best, at least in the minor league level. But I think with time, I think with some confidence building outings, once he gets called back up, whenever that time comes, I think you can build off of what you learned in your debut. You can set aside a little bit, not completely, because I think the nerves will still be there for a good while. But I think you can at least set aside the nerves that come with the debut, and you can peel that layer back and focus on. You can replace that layer with something positive to focus on, whether it's, you know, spotting a breaking pitch that you're working with, or whatever the case may be, you know. So the mind, I would imagine, in a situation like that is only capable of processing and focusing on so many things. And if for Jack Leiter in his debut, he's so focused on just calming his nerves, then as a result, that's one less thing that you can really think about. That's one less thing that you can divert energy to and attention to when you're on the mound. So hopefully when that time comes and he gets called back up, he can build off of this first outing, get the confidence built back up, and that he can provide, he can make a big impact for this team as they presumably make a run at the postseason. Because this kid's got some nasty stuff, man. Kid can blow up by it. I mean, the power stuff is there for a guy that's really not all that big in stature. He's got the juice. And I think when he finally gets to a point in his early career where he's clicking, that's going to be appointment television. So I'm excited for him to rebound from this, to get back into the swing and to really make an impact for these Rangers. A name I already mentioned, Paul Skeens, still waiting. I think since the last time you heard from us, he made his fourth consecutive scoreless start. That was Thursday night, so it would have been the night, the next day after we recorded on Wednesday. Fourth consecutive scoreless start to begin the season. Look, he's building up his pitch count. The issue, I think, with baseball fans, specifically Pirates fans, is just a question of how much is enough. Like, what is the end goal here? What are we trying to build him up to? What are we trying to stretch him out to? I understand that he's coming off over 120 innings of work for LSU last year. But with the Pirates, I'll give them this. I was quoted, I think it was last episode, as saying, like, what more does this kid have to do? Get him, like, just get the kid up there already. I've thought more about it since then. I would maybe walk it back a little bit and acknowledging that there is an inherent importance to protecting an arm as talented as Paul Skeens. But with that said, though, if the only reason that you're keeping him down there is to just stretch him out, my question is, why can't he do that with the big club? Because you heard, whether or not it was true or not, you heard from the Orioles that the reason they wanted Jackson Holliday down in AAA was to get some more looks at lefties, just to have a little bit more of consistency in that aspect of his game. He went down there. I think we talked about it. Was it the first AB that he saw once they sent him down off a lefty was a bomb? He proved that he was capable over the however many ABs that he was more than capable of making that adjustment. I don't know if the Pirates are expecting or hoping that Paul Skeens addresses or makes a tweak to something mechanically or to his mental game. I don't know. But if they're not, if that's not part of the plan here, and again, if the only element that they're focused on is stretching him out, why not do that with the big club? He went 65 pitches in his most recent outing. 65 pitches. You see that sort of outing a lot, especially with the ambiguity of starting pitching now. The lack of emphasis placed on starting pitching now, again, to revisit the whole, you got the whole opener approach now. You've got the whole utilizing the pen much earlier into games approach now. So, and it varies team by team, but like 60, if for not that they would, but hypothetically, let's just say that they wanted him to have a pitch count of 25 or 15, even something just asinine. Then I go, okay, like if we're starting like at absolute square one, okay, I get that. But he's putting up pitch counts now. Again, his most recent was 65. That's, you see, whether it's from a starter who's just on a short leash or like a long relief guy who runs out there for a spot start or something to give you a few innings right off the top. You see 65 pitches all the time. So like, what are we trying to stretch him out to? That's my question. And that's why I don't understand, because he's proven to you that he's not struggling results wise. I mean, he struck out, I read and jotted down that he has struck out 57.4% of the batters that he's faced. He's given up a total of 5 hits and 4 walks in 12 and 2/3. Small sample size, sure, but we've seen what he's capable of, even at this stage of his career. I don't think there are many question marks surrounding whether or not he can hang. I think he has this stuff. And sure, it'll take some time to polish it up, but I mean, what young kid doesn't need a little bit of polishing up with a skill set? That's going to come with time. That's going to come with outings. That's going to come with innings. And if you're running him out there for 65 pitches, why not just do it the big club? He's gonna make more of an impact at the big club, or with the big club, than he is in with AAA. I mean, I don't know. Obviously, I'm not a front office executive. I'm not a scout, so I'm just going off of what the eye can see, and I think a lot of other people would agree that the stuff is there. The pitch count is getting there. I understand you. Again, I get you want to protect him. But even he said, like, the frustration's there, man. He said that he wasn't happy about being removed from the game, his most recent outing. I call me crazy. I like a guy like that. I don't like a guy that's going to go out there and badmouth the club or the front office or whatever publicly, at least. Like, you can have those feelings privately, sure, whatever. But I like a guy that's frustrated that he's not. I don't know Skeens, but I'm guessing that frustration stems from wanting to compete, wanting to make an immediate impact, wanting to help the team that drafted him. I just, when I look at Paul Skeens, I see a guy that's just hungry to just shove it 1 through 9, shove, blow it by you 1 through 9. And when you're trying to play it safe, when you're trying to protect him, which again, I get, it just leads to frustration for all involved. You know, you got Pirates fans, even more so. You got fans across baseball that want to see this kid deal. And I think another area where the frustration comes into play is that the Pirates don't have the best track record of developing or managing their talent or their assets. So when you're trying to convince us that there's a line of reasoning involved in this decision making to keep him down, when he's just dicing and giving you pitch counts at this point that could eat up at least a handful of innings, and not just eat up innings, but presumably keep you in ball games. When you're trying to tell us that there's a reason for that, understand, Pittsburgh Pirates front office, when we're a little hesitant to take you at your word, because you don't have the best track record of handling young talent such as this or developing it, as I said. So all in all, it's tough, man. We want to see this kid come up, but it's a weird time in baseball right now where you got some very popular hot button key names, key players, young players that are hovering. They're either up or they're waiting to be called up. And each case is different. You can't look at them all the same. You can't brush them with the same stroke. There's different circumstances surrounding each guy. But I think the one that's most glaring right now, aside from Jackson Holliday's struggles at the plate, I think the one that's most glaring is the fact that you got a guy in Paul Skeens that's just hanging out in AAA right now when he very well could be contributing to the parent club. So hopefully soon, but time will tell. The Med City Connects. Can we talk about these real quick? I know we got into it a little bit. Was it last episode? After the leak had dropped, and as it's worth noting, now that the jerseys are official, I think the streak continues. I don't think we've had a City Connect leak that did not end up being the official City Connect. So we saw the leak came out. We talked about it. We kind of broke down our thoughts, but officially now the, I don't know, what do you even call these, man? For the Red Sox, they're like the marathon jerseys or the White Sox, the South Side jerseys or what, fill in the blank. But with the, are they the concrete unis? Like, what are we calling these for the Mets? I don't know. I'll say this. I'm not inspired by them. I know their whole thing was like really, as you can see across the chest, their whole thing was like pushing the New York City theme. A lot of people were saying, which to be fair, I was one of these people until I saw somebody make the correction. I'm like, yeah, it's a good point. I saw a lot of people, presumably Mets fans, talking about like, why didn't they take the Queens angle? You know, like, why try to compete with the Yankees? Go with something that's true to you and true to who you are as a franchise. Why not go with the Queens? And I was like, that's why not? That's such a slam dunk. Like they could have done so much with Queens, but then somebody's like, well, they're called City Connects. They're not called Borough Connects. So I'm like, that's fair. Yeah. I mean, City is New York. I get it. So with that said though, I said it last episode, man. I'm just out on the concept altogether, and I don't want to spend a bunch of time talking about it. There's no need to, but this is just yet another example where I think they kind of reverse engineered it, and that's more a conspiracy than anything, or that's just like a personal belief. There's no evidence to say that they actually just design a uniform and then connect the dots backwards. Like, okay, how can we connect this to the city? That's just what I think happens because it's based on what we see in the product that comes out. But you know, the gray, whatever. It's somebody made another good point. Like, it's weird that you can be wearing gray at home. Just a kind of a baseball sin. It's just kind of strange. I think they did salvage them a little bit by going with the opt-in for the white uniform pants. I think they maybe looked around the league and saved themselves the headache of switching. Like the Rockies originally started with colored pants. They switched to white. The Dodgers switched from their blue pants to white. And I think there was even one other club that made the switch because they just didn't like the colored pants. So I think the Mets probably initially were like, oh, let's just go all gray. And they're like, nah, that's weird. Let's go with white because it actually looks like a baseball uniform. The purple is interesting. I get the whole seven line subway thing. Like, I get it. I think it's cool. I think the hats suck. I mean, they're just not good. The font on the front, NYC, I think it's not bad. It's kind of boring in my books, but you know, what is my opinion to anyone? But it's not the worst I've seen, but it's not worth all the hype that it was getting from a corner of Mets Twitter. Must be some pretty diehard Mets fans if they're trying to hype this up. I don't know if I just don't see it. I don't think it's worth talking about. So I'm not going to talk about it anymore. Honestly, that about does it. That was just, there's just a handful of main items that I wanted to talk on there. A lot's happened. It was a good weekend of baseball, as I always say, depending upon who you're a fan of. But generally speaking, it was a good week of good weekend of baseball. Looking forward to another fresh week. Closing the book, Travis d'Arnaud. Shout out, Travis d'Arnaud. 4 bombs in 2 games, including, I believe, a grand slam. I think I saw one of those was a grand slam in his 3-homer game. I think, like 99% sure. If I'm wrong, I apologize. Pretty sure it was a grand slam. Holding it down. Look, while Sean Murphy's absence, Sean Murphy's on the shelf. Not making great progress in his return to the diamond. A little bit slower than I think the team and that fan base anticipated or hoped for. So it's good that he's holding it down in his absence. And John Sterling, with his abrupt retirement ceremony at Yankee Stadium this weekend, it was a topic of discussion. The gift that he received, I don't know if you've seen this, but his retirement gift, they walked out, like, I think it was an 83-inch TV. And I think that he said he already has like 5 TVs in his apartment or home or wherever he lives. And it wasn't until I was just scrolling through Twitter before I hopped on, and somebody made the point. Which I didn't even notice this when I saw it the first time. They didn't even bother to put like a bow on it or wrap it, or I don't even know if they put his name on it. It was literally as though I saw somebody tweeted. They said, this honestly makes me think that they told Gleyber Torres to take the team credit card, run to Best Buy, and just get what you could find. That's honestly what it made me think of. I mean, I get it. It was short. It was abrupt. This whole announcement of John Sterling calling it quits from the Yankees booth. But I mean, come on, maybe a little bit more than an 83-inch TV. I mean, I would love an 83-inch TV. Don't get me wrong, but it's the New York Yankees. I think you can swing. I mean, what is that TV running? Probably like, I mean, worst case, like 5K. I don't know much about TVs, but I can't imagine an 83-inch TV being more than five, like a top of the line 83-inch TV. I can't imagine that being more than like 5,000. Right? Am I like way off in my estimate there? You're the New York Yankees. This guy's been with the club for years, for decades. And all you can swing him is like an unwrapped, unbowtied TV. I don't know. I think it's a little weird. That's all. I'm not trying to complain on Sterling's behalf. I just thought it was weird. Like, I get it was short notice, but I just thought they would have had, I thought they would have done something a little nicer for him. That's all. But anyway, that's all we got. Or that's all I got. There's no we, just me today. Hope to have Ryan on sometime soon. I won't make that promise. I won't put him on the spot. But in the meantime, for those unaware, I was on the Bridge to Bucktober podcast mere hours before this recording of episode 426, talking Pirates, Red Sox from the weekend. If you're not a Pirates fan, if you're not a Red Sox fan, you're not interested in the topics of conversation on there. We do talk We talked O'Neal Cruz on there. We talked Paul Skeens. There's even a mention of Rob Manfred conspiracy talk on there, in terms of what's going on around the league in terms of scorekeeping with hits and errors. A little bit of everything in there. So feel free to check that out. I'm not entirely sure when it'll drop. I would imagine within the next 24 hours, but go check out yours truly's appearance on that podcast, Bridge to Bucktober. And that should do it for me. Going back to what I said, wrap it up. I don't want to make the promise of having Ryan on, hoping to get him on sometime this week, or maybe even to start next week, depending upon what our needs are for the podcast. I'm not sure when we're going to get Nate back officially, but I think he'll be back by the end of next week. So, like I said, may have Ryan on, may not. You may just be stuck with me. We'll see. But other than that, that's all I got. Subscribe. Please subscribe to us on YouTube. To reiterate, we're trying to reach 2,000 by the end of the year. We're coming up on 1K. And we're moving along. We're moving along nicely, getting a lot of content up on that. So would greatly appreciate if you could show us some love there. We say it every time, even if you don't watch us on YouTube or you're just not active on YouTube, but you have an account or something, just hit us with a subscribe. It helps us greatly. And we really appreciate your all support. We appreciate you listening. We always say it, baseball, it's a long season. And we are grateful for you all hopping on board with us for the entirety of the year and beyond. So with that, on behalf of Nate and myself, we thank you guys for listening. Nate would tell you don't go chasing curveballs, but as always, we love you all. And as always, looking forward to talking more baseball with you guys soon. Stay filthy.